Hello and welcome to Startup Dads. I'm Amrit Santhirasanan, CEO of a high-growth startup, father to a young daughter. Join me as I speak to ultra-successful parent founders, venture capitalists and investors to take a look at the world through their eyes and uncover the lives, drives and strategies of parents in business. We're here to show you that you can grow a thriving business and happy family at the same time. It's a first this week on the show, as we have a startup mum and dad on at the same time in the form of Sophie Eden and Sam Gordon, founders of the executive search firm Gordon and Eden. They specialise in finding world-class digital and technology talent for some of the world's most innovative companies, including a lot of startups. They've also grown their business while growing their families at the same time, having five kids between them before and during the journey. In this episode, we cover making family time, romantic notions versus practical reality, juggling glass balls and plastic balls, and creating a business in the image of your clients. As always, it's great to hear from you all, so do leave me a comment or send a DM on Twitter at StartupDadsPod. Alternatively, reach me on LinkedIn at Amrit Santhirasanan and I promise to get back to you. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Startup Dads. And this week, we've got a novelty for the show. We have both a startup dad and a startup mum on at the same time. So I'm delighted to introduce Sophie Eden and Sam Gordon. Sophie, Sam, how are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks, Amrit. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm not going to lie. I am doing what founders do. I'm attempting to take holiday at Christmas and therefore I'm doing all the 2 weeks of work from that time this week. And my co-founder is in New Zealand. Yeah, good for him. And 5:30 starts for me is the way I'll say that. But I love
my co-founder. It's always a stressful time of year, isn't it? Just, you know, and before any holiday, I think as a founder or, as you know, just working when you know you've got that time off, it's always quite manic.
Yes, indeed. And we run an enterprise technology company here, which means we have that extra delightful flavour of Q4, which, again, I'm sure you're both familiar with having consulted with your clients. So look, let's jump into it. Can you talk to me about the time that you became startup dads and startup mums?
When we started the business, which is almost 8 years ago now, I had my first child who was two, and we were planning to have another. In many ways, felt like the worst possible time to start a business. Had a young child, my wife had stopped working for that moment, so we were single income, we needed to get a bigger house. We were in a position where, you know, life was absolutely full on. Both Sophie and I, because we worked at the same company before, were both in an incredibly good place as well. I think we started business from a company where, you know, we had an incredible environment, we'd been very successful in that business, and there was a really strong path ahead. So it felt to many people counterintuitive that you would then leave all of that, leave the security of a good base salary, equity in a great business to go and then start something at a time where you had very little time on your hands.
So can I ask then, because it's the canonical question to ask all founders, why did you do it?
Yeah, I think because we had a real belief that there was a problem to fix in the market that we operated in. We felt that the executive search industry did not have a company that was truly in tune with what we saw to be, you know, changing dynamic in the industry. This movement of talent between startups, scale-up and corporate organizations in both directions, a massive investment in the UK tech economy. If you think about the time we started, Monzo hadn't launched yet. Deliveroo, I think, had just raised their seed round. This was a very different time. We just felt there was a real place in the market for a firm that was able to work with the transformation we saw in the early stage industry, the rapidly scaling market, and also the transformation of big corporate digital organizations as well. And it's a gap that we wanted to fill, as well as making the industry have a challenger brand like many of our clients that was trying to shake up the industry brand and operate in a different way to how we saw lots of the established organizations in our space.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I've got so many follow-up questions, but I feel before doing that, I'd want to hear Sophie's journey too. So Sophie.
Yeah, so mine's slightly different in the respect that when Sam and I set up the business, I had just got married. So I knew we were, you know, hopefully going to have children. I knew I wanted to have two or three children if it was possible. I didn't know what I didn't know. So in hindsight, it was mad. If I think about the fact that I have three children in 3.5 years when I had a business that was 2 years old, it was a bad time to set up a business, you could argue. But I think, A, I didn't know what I didn't know. And also, I think I was exceptionally fortunate that, My mum has been a big role model for me. She always had a big career, but took out about 7 or 8 years when she had me or my brother. And she just always said it was a big mistake for her from a career point of view. And she always wished that she wouldn't have taken such a big chunk of time out, because it was very hard to go back in after so long out. So I think for me, it was a case of it felt like the right time to set up the business. As we always say to candidates, the right job doesn't always come up at the right time. It just felt like it was the right thing to do, and I would just make it work. And that's what I have then gone on to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, both of you have touched on this, and we talk about this a lot on the show, that there is no right time for any of these sorts of things, particularly if you're trying to combine two very, very difficult things.
Yeah.
So I'm keen to just to unpack a little bit, making it work, because I suppose one of the things I reflect on a lot now is how it feels like the pandemic has been around forever, and the perceptions on the way people work and how people work are different now. And it's so much more acceptable, right, for people to be working much more flexibly. I kind of think back and think it was nuts how we used to work.
Sure.
Candidly. Yeah. But so I suppose a question for you, because both of you have built this very successful business and you've lots of kids between you now. How did you make it work? Were the working patterns that we see nowadays kind of standard at your business for a long time? How did that unravel?
Yeah, and I think we've always strived to have a very trusting and sort of mature environment for our staff. So there was always an understanding that we needed to spend time together as a team to build culture and to collaborate, and particularly for more junior people to learn from more experienced staff. But we've always had that flexibility that you've got a bunch of interview reports to do and you want to work from home. You've got a delivery coming, you know, whatever that is. We've always said to people, if you want to go to the gym when it's less busy, because that's the right time for you, or you just want to work from home that day, not a problem. We've always had that environment. So moving into the pandemic wasn't really a big shift for us.
We were on Zoom pre-pandemic.
That's great. Yeah, I don't know whether it's a little bit more common to the technology world, but the technology world does feel like it's been a little bit ahead of the curve on that side of things, particularly highly technology enabled businesses.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it depends what you mean by flexible as well, you know, because to me, before I was a parent, but I was always working, you know, late at night. If I had something to do earlier on in the day, you know, you fit in the work you need to do and the time you have it. And so I think that was something I think Sam and I have always done in terms of be efficient with our time.
Been thinking back recently to the early days of setting up the business, and you know, I remember having a Christmas holiday for a last bit of sunshine before I knew that income was dropping off and we may not have a holiday in the sun again for a while, and you're getting ready to set up the business. But we were writing the website and starting to plan the business on a family holiday. You know, work's always, you know, had its place to fit in with other activities, and it's not always going to be perfect.
For sure. That gives me a nice kind of thread to pull on a little bit. So, you know, what does startup mum and dad life look like for you now? Because I suppose I'm keen to jump into a question that I've been itching to ask you, which is about the black art of running an executive search firm. Your business is a highly people-driven business. I expect there's huge amounts of communication, conversation needing to go on. Pre-pandemic, what sort of challenges and compromises or adaptations did you have to make as kids came along to try and kind of fit in, work with clients who I expect are demanding and have expectations about you accommodating them, but then needing to overlay that with family life as well?
I think there's lots of answers to that question, but I think the two kind of key things that really stand out is, firstly, I think as most parents know with young children, everything is a phase. So what works at one point won't work at a different point. My oldest is 5 and we're now waking up earlier than when he was a newborn because we're doing spellings, you know, at 6:30 in the morning, because that's the only time in the day that it fits to do that. So I think firstly, it's just being adaptable to the phase that you're in. Yeah, just working out at the different points what works. And I think the other big thing for me is about really working out what works for you as a family, because I think as a founder or working in a startup, I mean, we're 8 years in now, but it's still as demanding as ever. It's about really, really being true to yourself and what works for you. And I think that as a parent, there are lots of kind of societal pressures with when you should be present and what you should be present for. And I think that it's about really working out the impact. I know, for example, I don't pick up my kids from school. You know, I've had lots of comments in the past from other parents about how awful that is that I don't do that. But, you know, we've chosen a school that's quite far away from where we live. It's a 2.5 kind of 2 hours there and back. When I pick my kids up from school, they're exhausted. It's not like we have this kind of romantic long conversations in the car. I think there's this kind of, as I said, romantic notion of what some of these things are. Whereas actually when I come back from work and we have really good quality time at the end of the day, that works for us as a family. So I think it's really about, for us anyway, it's like really being true to yourself as to what works and trying to shut out the noise of the expectations of what you should be doing.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. And I think my kids have kind of grown up knowing that daddy runs a business. He has certain times where he's got to take important calls.
Yeah.
We have chosen to work with the most ambitious and most exciting businesses in the world. So to your earlier point, responsiveness is really important, and you have to be able to be on top of a lot of things at once in executive search. We were thinking about this conversation today, and I'd reminded Sophie of a time where I was on a family holiday. We're staying in this beautiful redwood forest on the California coast in this cabin. And the only time the CEO could speak that week was going to be 6 a.m. in the morning. And it was a really important conversation at a critical part of the search. And I had to do that call. So I crept out of this cabin and got into my car at 5:30 and drove down to this kind of trucker stop down the road, the only place I could get decent Wi-Fi signal to log onto this Zoom.
That's amazing.
You know, and then, you know, came back and we had the family day. I was probably a little bit tired that morning, but nothing strong coffee wouldn't cure. But did that really impact on family holiday? No, it didn't. But did that remove a massive bit of stress from my life because it's a problem that had to be solved and we managed to sort it out on that call? Yes, it did. And I think it's about not always having these hard lines between, you know, work life and home life. And, you know, and sometimes family has to fit around work and sometimes work has to fit around family.
Yeah.
And I think you've just got to choose the moment. Sophie, you've got this amazing analogy you give about the glass balls and the plastic balls.
Yeah, exactly. I can't take credit for having come up with it myself, but there's this amazing analogy about the juggle. And, you know, it was something I read about, don't see balls as plastic and glass. So some tasks you might have to do with the kids are plastic and some are glass. And the glass balls you really don't want to drop, but the plastic balls are okay to drop. And it's kind of the same with both things. And it's recognizing what are those glass balls that are just the hard no's and things. I think it's a great analogy because I think, you know, that question about balance, it's just, it doesn't work. It's the blend.
No, and something you touched on there, which we haven't had on the show, which is absolutely great, Sophie, is that notion of the romantic ideal. I was talking to someone earlier about the challenges of having children and, you know, all the surprising, wonderful moments that you have with a child that are really special. But there is also a ton of incredibly mundane moments, like life, right? That's just what life is. It's the sublime and the ridiculous and the mundane all mixed together. And I think your point about working those out, like what quality time is, right? And what quantity time is a really great point to zoom in on.
Yeah.
You know, my wife works a high pressure city job and we can't pick Eva up most days. And we've got someone to help us with that. But we make the time in other ways, like you say, so that actually we can get the quality time in.
Absolutely.
Well, as I said earlier, I was keen to talk to you a little bit on the startup side and to talk a little bit about the black art of running an executive search firm. So HX, you know, we're going through the journey of learning to hire executives. We're a post-Series A startup and building out the first executive layer in our business. And, you know, one of the things I've been doing lots of reading and research, as I want to do, and everyone talks about how it's one of the most important and difficult things for a startup to do. So maybe we can just, you know, for our listeners who are in the phase where they're a little bit more startup than dad and mum at the moment, could you share some of your knowledge, you know, your experience of building this business and working with some of the top firms in the world about what people do well and maybe what people should avoid as well?
Could I just take one point before we go into that, which is around the black art? It's really interesting because I think our industry has kind of grown up with this notion of mystique and I think the idea that it is a black art, when actually one of the reasons that we set up the business is we felt that exec search firms in some cases were not completely transparent. They disappear for 8 weeks, come back with a shortlist. Clients wouldn't really understand how they'd arrived at that shortlist. There wasn't complete transparency.
Yes.
There wasn't always a level of flexibility. And if you think of the clients we work with, so startups in particular, but also the, you know, the bigger digital businesses that we work with, they're fast moving, priorities change. You need to be able to pivot. You need to be able to adapt. And you need to think quite creatively about how you solve a specific problem and the kind of profiles that you're hiring to help address those. So one thing that we've really tried to do is create a search firm in the image of our clients and to bring a level of transparency, responsiveness, and flexibility within a good commercial framework that we feel the industry really needed. So yeah, I just wanted to give that first initial bit of feedback.
That's super cool, because that is actually applying the startup philosophy, right? To try and mirror image, fit it to be the complement of your users' problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best startups are the ones that fit with those, and it clicks together really nicely. So that's super cool to hear it being applied in this way.
And I think as well, you know, part of the reason why people do find it super challenging when they try and do it themselves is because it's an exceptionally time consuming process.
Yes.
And I think, you know, to really land the right candidate, there is a, you know, huge amount of detail that goes into that process. And the reality is a lot of firms, and we recruit C-level talent. And so, you know, people at that level who are recruiting just don't have the time to put in to really get the result needed. And I think that's why there's also this kind of perception that it's exceptionally difficult, because it largely comes down to time and detail.
For sure. Yeah, that's super useful and quite refreshing to hear. With that in mind, I suppose, what have you seen and what can you share learnings to help the people who are spending time on it make best use of their time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes to that point on detail. I think it's lots of little things that can really help to land a candidate. And I think that a lot of people miss the basic points and the basic fundamentals, things like, you know, the interview process. If that's really, you know, drawn out and sometimes even not clear from the outset, you know, who's going to be interviewing candidates, and therefore do they have calendar availability, or do you really know what you're looking for? Or actually, is it during the process that businesses actually kind of work out what they need? It's those kinds of details. You know, the market for top talent is always exceptionally competitive. An interview is a two-way process. And so it's about sometimes just the basic fundamentals, I think people forget, that are really, really important to a process.
Customer experience is something that we hear so many of our clients obsess about. And we think that's something which is essential in an exec search. Every single touch point, you know, with a candidate is important, whether that's from us in our engagement with the candidate, from that first conversation through the, you know, the multiple check-ins you have with somebody through a process, through to the different people they meet at the client, even turning up and having a surly, you know, response from somebody meeting and greeting them. The smallest things can really have a big impact on impressions of candidates. So we do everything that we can to have exceptional customer experience for both our clients and the candidates throughout.
That's really interesting. And I think it's very easy sometimes to forget, particularly in the startup world, that the process is as much a process of selling, right, as it is a purchase of buying, if you're going to use that analogy.
Absolutely.
And it is sometimes a bit of a learning curve for some founders that we work with in the earlier stage businesses. They haven't been through that before. And, you know, by their very nature, they're incredibly passionate people. They're absolutely convinced about their reason for setting up the business, their commitment to the cause. And it's sometimes about gently helping them to understand that somebody else has to go on that journey. And they may never reach quite the same level. You obviously want someone who's extremely bought in and passionate and up for the challenge, but they may never reach quite the same levels as that founder.
For sure. It's the baby of the founder. And it's great. You can definitely care deeply about someone else's child, but not quite the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Key question for you now. What's the biggest lesson that you've learned from your journeys in entrepreneurship that you want to pass on to your kids?
I'm sure you've had this on this podcast lots of times, but my big one that I try so hard to implement into my kids, but it is that growth mindset. It's that resilience. And if we're trying to kind of be adaptable into a process or something doesn't quite go to plan, then in the business world, the way to really manage that is just to take a step back, think about how to adapt and move on. And I think it's really instilling that into the kids and making sure they've got a growth mindset is an amazing, he's a psychologist. I think her name is Harold Dweck.
Carol Dweck, yes.
Yeah. And I've read and, you know, I really, really try and kind of instill that into my kids now. But the theory sometimes is easier than the practice.
Yeah. Do you know, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to one of our investors, actually. We were reflecting on what it's like when your kids are young. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I often feel like kids are kind of born with a growth mindset at the very beginning. And, you know, watching a child when they're very young, you know, my daughter is two now, two on Sunday, and watching her kind of learning to talk, and when she was learning to walk, it's fascinating. Like, the geeky software engineer is like, I'm watching a neural network get trained, right? It keeps failing and it does like reinforcement learning. It's like, this works and this doesn't work. And it's almost in my mind trying to stop them from losing that lack of, you know, seeing everything as an experiment which teaches you things. Things that you learn may not be exactly what you thought you were going to learn.
Yeah.
But trying to keep them to have that.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's about the impact of language as a parent, because I think when I start thinking about this too much, I, you know, panic about the responsibility that we all have. But I think the reality is that one phrase in the wrong way can completely change their perception of something. And so that's why I think it is about trying really hard. Before I read about Carol Dweck's theory, I'd never even really understood that concept. And it's just fascinating when you look into some of that research. So I think it is just realizing that you don't want to knock that natural kind of innate growth mindset out of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if you've read Soul for Happy. Sophie got me onto Mo Gaudat's book, and he talks about how an infant is intrinsically happy with the world, and then they get conditioned by the adult world. So it's really interesting when you talk about that growth mindset and how children learn and how children operate. And I think it's our job as parents to try not to kill that innate spirit kids have, while obviously still needing them to put shoes on and get out the house and, you know, all the other stuff we struggle with.
Indeed.
And to answer the question, there's probably three things. Am I allowed three?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're quite short ones. One, and I think probably the most important lesson I've given my kids, is that you have to be passionate about what you're doing. And sometimes that passion comes naturally. Sometimes you have to find that passion. A bit of maths homework isn't something that you're excited about now, but you've got to find the passion. You've got to think about being the best that you can be in whatever you're doing. And that's going to make you feel more fulfilled, even if it wasn't something you necessarily wanted to do. So that's one thing. Always try and get them to find the passion in everything, whatever that might be. Number two, book I'm sure you've heard of, is Eat the Frog. If you can do the thing you least want to do first in the day, everything else is going to be a lot easier. So if you had to eat a frog in that day, do it first thing. Have that frog for breakfast, because everything else that you do that day is going to be a lot easier. It was quite a strong image when they were really small. And then the third one is, nothing ever good happens at the party after 2 a.m. So always make sure you're in an Uber when you get home. And although they're not old enough to go out, I'm just instilling that in them now.
Yeah, that's a good one to get in there early. I wish that my dad had given me that advice. I got that into me when I was early. Yeah. I often think back on my pre-startup life about the number of brain cells I destroyed by not heeding that very valuable advice. We haven't had that one before. That's definitely new on the show. So good on you, Sam, for teaching that to your kids at a very early age.
Yeah, definitely.
Either that, or you're much older than you look and your kids are 19 or something like that.
No, not yet, thank God.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, look, that's been fantastic. And thank you so much for sharing your insights across a variety of different subjects there. I often find when I talk to entrepreneurs, you get to hear the common themes in the approach. You know, lots of the advice you give them there straddles both the startup and the dad and mum life. So really, really great show. But before we go, we'd like to wrap up the show with our usual segment, Startup Shoutouts, where we shine a light on some organizations, people, founders, anyone in the startup ecosystem that we admire.
Startup Shoutouts.
So who are your startup shoutouts today?
Well, we've got two. We're being a bit cheeky because there are two of us. And we have,
I think you're allowed.
We have invested in both of these businesses as well, because we are so passionate about what they do. So the first one is called Hello Self, which is an amazing platform that's all about making you the best version of yourself. And they're building an incredible AI tool to help do that. But at the moment, it's a way to get therapy online, so connecting with a good therapist. And that's, they're doing that through either individual work or through, you know, businesses allowing people to connect with therapists, which clearly at the moment with, you know, the way that the issues with mental health is clearly really, really important. And then the second one, Sam, I'll let you talk about the second one that we've invested in.
Oh, sorry, I should also say, and on the first one, that's something which we've offered to all of our staff. If you ever want to use it, do you ever want to speak to somebody, particularly during the pandemic when I think everybody was wrestling with a new world, it was kind of part of our offer to the team. And then the second one is a very apt, another one that Sophie and I both invested in, so we do some seed investing. It's called Kami, K-A-M-I, Kami Coach. It's a health tech business that's focused on helping people cope with being parents. And it's for all kinds of different scenarios. It's something which employers can also offer their staff as well as a benefit. So it could be anything from going through IVF, through helping your kids get to sleep, coping with maternity or paternity leave. And it's a fantastic business led by a lady called Erica Brodnock, who is the most amazing person. She's got five children. She's doing a PhD. She's running this business as well. She's an absolute powerhouse. We were lucky to get involved in the very early seed round. And then Google have actually come in and invested in the business from their Black Founders Fund, which they've been deploying for some key businesses across Europe. And she was the recipient of one of those investments. So good to see it has the Google stamp of approval as well.
That's pretty awesome. Well, they're definitely going to get a good shout out from the show. I feel like you've given us potentially some startup mum there for the show as well.
And Charlie actually is a startup dad as well. Charlie, who is the founder of Hello Self, an incredible parent and, you know, devoted dad. So yeah, be a good one too.
One thing we do have is a long list of amazing entrepreneurs on speed dial. So if you need any recommendations, if we couldn't give you any, we'd probably be very bad at our jobs.
That's a very good point, and we'll definitely be taking you up on that. Well, look, Sophie, Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's been an absolute cracker. I always make the joke that, you know, this is free coaching for me, lots of lessons to learn, and I'll be adding the plastic balls and glass balls analogies straight onto my own internal list. So a really great time on the show. Thank you for coming.
Lovely. Yeah, lovely to chat. Take care.
Thanks again. Cheers, Amrit.
Many thanks to today's guest. You'll find links to them and their work in the show notes. It would really help us if you shared the show with a friend or colleague. So if you know someone who might find this podcast valuable, please pass it on to them. If you'd like to connect with me, reach out on Twitter at StartupDadsPod.